Hey everybody, Adam here once again for a new episode of TFG Radio. As you can tell, we are not on the Twitch stream today because John has decided to abandon us and not help out. At least that's my story. But so today I'm joined by Daniel.
He's outgrown us.
He's outgrown us. He's beyond us. So today I've got Danny once again, and we have a special guest today, one of the other LVO judges and also a co-host from the Forge the Narrative podcast, Mr. Chris Morgan. Hello, Chris.
Hello, I am Substitute John.
You're going to need to be a lot more annoying than
my ceilings are pretty vaulted, just in case.
Yeah. I'm
love
sure,
you, John.
I'm sure John will love to hear that. You're his substitute.
I can just see all of the goat memes just get throwing in the chat. Just
yep.
I'm already loving this already. Yeah. So as we mentioned last week, this is kind of a part two of the LVO weekend. We basically talked about our day one and day two. Chris was with us all the whole weekend. Was there anything, Chris, from the regular from the first six rounds that stood out to you? Just to get your quick recap of your 2 days.
Well, it's pretty interesting because, you know, day one, we had our obligatory BCP half an hour schedule delay.
Yes.
But that was like the most dramatic thing that happened day one.
In-game.
It was day two.
Because remember we had the seizure on round two.
Oh yes. Well, that's kind of weird for me because I left for lunch after a very tame round one, and I come back and they're like, "Hey, you missed the seizure, and this happened, and this happened." And I'm like, "Geez, I go to lunch, and I just can't leave you people, can I?"
That's why I don't take lunch. You miss out on the action in Vegas.
Well, the curry was worth it, but no, like that was a pretty tame day for me, at least so far as judge concerns
compared to previous years. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Like I'm used to the last couple of years where we had like people threatening this or that or who or that or check these dice and all of that other stuff. Like that, none of that happened. None of that happened this year. So day two, round five, that's when I started noticing people getting tired and things getting a little bit more difficult to manage for some people. Mm-hmm. People having a lot more questions, people getting a little bit more riled up. Things starting to smell a little worse.
God, yeah. I can't remember if we mentioned that last episode, but I think it was round one when you guys first smelled it.
Oh yeah. There were two people in particular that I was just like, because every year I would keep in my judge bag, mm-hmm. like some Axe spray.
Yes.
And I would walk by and just spray somebody and keep going. Because what are you going to do?
Yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh, he just sprayed me. It's like, yep. And now I've got cards. But no, like, take a bath, people. But, I guess it's technically people. There were two of them. But yeah, I mean, another thing potentially for the code of conduct next year. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But, yeah, very, very relatively low drama. You guys covered pretty much most of the bases.
Yeah.
One of the things that, you know, that happened on day two that we didn't really talk about was the paint judging.
Oh yeah.
We talked about what happened with the one player with the double yellows, which you were part of the judging of that army.
Yeah, and the double yellows player. Are you talking about the one where I handed out the double?
No, we're talking about the one John handed out because. The player hadn't presented two of the models. Had hid. Hid two models while he was paint judge. So we may have to adjust the code of conduct to reflect hiding models.
Right.
Well, we shouldn't have to, first of all.
It wasn't just that. It's like first he hid them, right?
Yes.
He hid them. His army got paint judged. He didn't like the score he got. So he demanded a rejudging. So yeah. John rejudged based on the rubric. He got a higher score. Yippee-skippy. Walking around. We look at the table. Hey, look. There's some unpainted bottles there.
Right.
Or at least mostly unpainted. Unpainted enough that were not present for the paint judging. So, yeah, of course, dude. One, you have unpainted models that you're playing in your army. Yeah. And two, you lied to us. Have a nice tournament. This is the end of round one.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
now we also did discuss the player that was, I would describe it as aggressively trying to talk to his opponents after the game was or games were already over.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yes.
That's the one you were talking about. Yes.
Yes, that was the one I was talking about, and I didn't know if we wanted to get into that. It's like that was the start of our day three.
Yeah, you know, and that's funny because the tournament was essentially over for that player, the player that we carded. So I don't know. Well, at least for when you gave him the second yellow, or the double yellow.
But, yeah. We talked a little bit
about it, but if you want to elaborate, because you handled that whole situation for both days that it occurred.
Yeah, and I think that this also will go, you know, a long way to addressing some people's concerns. Like, people have talked about the code of conduct system being weaponized a little bit, and this could have been an instance where that became true, in my opinion. And that's my personal opinion. It's nothing that I could necessarily prove some kind of malicious intent, but enough happened that gave me kind of the suspicion of it. So, Jason Butler, who is one of Reese's employees, saw this guy very distraught out in the hallway, shaking, angry, sweaty, whatever, has him come and, talk to me about what he feels like his opponent taking advantage of him or deliberately misleading him. Mm-hmm. The situation just kind of boiled down to a he said, he said, but there were certain facts that weren't lining up. And at the end of the day, what happened was his opponent was going to try and time out the clock. He didn't want that to happen. Called the judge over. The judge came over. I think that was you, Adam. Said, no, you can't time out the clock.
Yes.
Which is against the spirit, but not against the letter. So
yeah, we had a player in round one, I believe, do that, and we actually did card them because he actually did do it. We didn't find out till like towards the end of the game that they had used the clock.
I think
until
the next round.
Was it the next round?
Well, he told us after the scores were submitted and things for that, because he essentially was gloating about it.
Jesus Christ, guys. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it happened before, so we were aware that people could possibly be trying to do that with the clock.
But and that makes it consistent. Now, and that doesn't, you know, so far as the ruling goes, and that doesn't mean that, you know, we didn't need to tighten that up beforehand. I think that we, you know, we should probably own that was something that kind of missed, you know, we missed the mark on that just a little bit, but we are ruling it consistently. The guy who took advantage of the clock ended up getting carded, but at that time, he said, okay, you know, I'll go with what the judge said. He agreed to it, right, Adam? He didn't fight it or anything.
No, he did. He was fine with playing out the rest of the game.
Yeah, and he offered to concede to this distraught opponent of his. The distraught opponent, you know, and this was turn five. The distraught opponent said, no, I want to keep playing, and decided to roll dice, and then failed to score any points. Right? He failed to score enough points to get the win that he would have gotten, and it ended up being a tie.
Yes.
And from my perspective, this player just could not own up to the fact that he had made the mistake by not accepting the handshake.
Mm-hmm.
And he was upset, and he tried to put it on his opponent instead of himself. Now, that is my observation from what happened, because I talked to him, I talked to his opponent, I talked to people who were there, and I came to my conclusion based on those three conversations.
Right.
And, you know, the guy, his opponent, who had done the clock thing, he got his yellow card, which I'm actually sending him a signed one, because he requested that. I was hoping to get your guys' signature actually before we left, but it escaped my mind. I may even just give him a little plaque with the card on it. It's like a personal victim card or something like that. Cause he felt totally justified in the move that he did, but he accepted the ruling gracefully, and it became kind of a funny joke after that point. And I've now nicknamed him Yellow Card.
Nice.
But, His opponent.
Harsh. That was a crappy band.
Wow.
I could tell you a story. They came to my high school once, And I think the lead singer or whoever was drunk in his trailer in the parking lot. Anyway, sidebar. But the instruction that I gave to the distraught player after I made my ruling, and he said, can I go to this guy and can I ask him to be a good person and concede the game after the game had already been finished and after I had already made my ruling? And I said, no, you asked us to get involved. We got involved. We've made our ruling. You need to live with it. Don't bother him again, because he had softcore threatened the guy when he came up when we were talking earlier. He's like, I can't be around you right now. I can't have you close to me right now.
Oh my God.
Which is, it's not really a threat, but it's also just like, okay, well, what are you going to do?
Right,
this guy's like a foot taller than you and obviously military. Like, what are you exactly going to do to this person?
And he's going to cry really hard at him.
That sometimes works.
And I had instructed him not to do that. Well, later that evening, I was approached by several different people who told me that he had actually come and tried to talk his opponent into conceding again after I had explicitly instructed him not to, which I felt was a little shady.
Well, I mean, to me, it's also a bit disrespectful, at least to the judge.
Absolutely disrespectful to me. I mean, I don't want to make it too much about me. I'm a big boy and I can handle my feelings. But the fact that we had given him an order, and it is an order at that point, and he ignored it and did his own thing anyway.
Right.
They ended up playing, of course, in the fake seventh round, not together.
No, they were side by side. That was the best.
And then they both played to see if they would go on to the finals. And this distraught player lost his game in the not seventh round, the 6.5 round.
6.5, yeah.
And lo and behold, he comes and says, well, hey, I think my opponent cheated me.
Which was the next morning, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he came to me, and it had mentioned that, and again, he wanted to talk to him. I'm like, no, we can't talk to him. We're about to start the round of eight. You can talk to him after the round.
Right.
And he said, okay. As the players are coming to the table, he essentially just leans over into him, not that close though, not like face to face, but it's almost like if he was on the rope, separating him from the players, he leans in and just yells out that he's a cheater to that effect, maybe not those exact words, or that he cheated, or I heard the word cheat in there somewhere. And that's when I told you, Chris, that what he had done after you told me what he had done the previous day. And that's when you decided to go talk to him. And we had discussed basically what to do, and you decided to go talk to him. And I don't know what happened when you talked to him, but I know you gave him the two yellows.
Yeah, so, I mean, we want to look into people's reputation. And this guy's reputation kind of spoke for itself. After I'm kind of like, okay, so this guy, he can't own up to the mistake that he made. And I have to tell him to. This kind of seems like a behavior that if it's going to happen here, it's probably happened in a store or something. So I figured out what area is from. We heard and from people in his area that this sort of thing and the way that he does things tend to go in this direction. I just found it very curious that in both the games that he either tied or lost, his opponent cheated him somehow. And then he ignores the judge. I mean, and if it had been a private event with security and he had leaned over you like he did, he probably would have been socked and dragged out.
At the very least, dragged out, yeah. If it was that type of event with security and velvet ropes and all the hullabaloo about,
And he crossed the line and he crossed the line twice. One, by ignoring me. Two, by ignoring you. Obviously he didn't see the harm, and this is something that's in the code of conduct explicitly, that you can't just make up stuff about people and accuse them of cheating and have no consequence if there's no proof of that.
Right. Right. And at the time, we didn't, I mean, I'm not saying he was cheating, but I'm not saying he wasn't. I wasn't there. Danny was there for that 6.5. Danny, did you?
I was, despite being exhausted, I walked those tables pretty consistently, and I think I got 3 questions, and I can't remember one from that guy specifically.
Or from the towel player.
From that table. Right. Like I didn't hear any, like, you know, it was quiet, so I could hear everyone talking. I didn't hear any heated discussions. Yeah. I didn't hear any heated discussions, anything that would have led me to be like, huh, what's going on here? So if that guy was cheating him, I don't know how that fool seemed to understand that or know that until after the fact.
Yeah.
Cause it's not like he was like, hey, no, you can't do that. Well, you know, it was all very, yeah, okay. Oh, I'm going to do this, right? Like, just how am I supposed to know someone is having conflict unless they tell me?
Right. And if you are having a problem, and if you do feel like you're getting cheated, you need to talk to the judge. You need to do that. That needs to be proactive from your point, because, you know, from our perspective, even as close as we're getting, right, to these games and these final matches, which we'll talk about, we cannot see everything the way the player sees it, from the perspective the player sees it, with the full context that the player sees it.
Exactly.
So, regardless, he accused his opponents of cheating or taking advantage of him, and it was either a mistake on his part or an outright lie. We'll let the listeners decide. He ignored the judges on 2 separate occasions. So 2 people, 2 problems, 2 failures to launch, 2, you know, 2 cases of him not of falling through. So I gave him 2 yellow cards.
Right.
And I said, hey, listen, I instructed you to do this. You didn't do it. This other judge instructed you to do this, and you didn't do it. You did what you wanted to anyway. You ignored what we said. Here's 1 yellow card for each of us. 1 more and you're out of here. We will not be disrespected like that. When you call us and ask us for a ruling, you have to live by it. You need to own up to your own mistakes. And just because somebody beats you or you can't beat somebody else doesn't mean that they cheated.
Right.
You have to have something more than that. And his memory on all these, like all the particulars was incredibly just lost to the void somehow.
He couldn't remember...
specifically what happened or the order in which it happened when everybody else could. And you could chalk that up to a heightened emotional state, but yeah. I just find it very peculiar that in both instances, he can't name how he was cheated.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't sit right with me. So he, yes, you know, yellow card got his yellow card, but that was for a clock issue.
Right.
But this guy who perhaps was trying to manipulate the code of conduct to leverage himself into a top 8 position, did not get away with it and was punished in return for it.
Yeah, big tournaments like LVO, Nova, Adepticon attracts people from a lot of different places, and unfortunately, we can't keep track of everybody and their tendencies. So when people come to LVO, especially if they plan to come multiple years in a row, if they plan to come like every year or every other year, the only time we get to see you is at the LVO, at least as a judge, if not a player, and you don't want your what essentially is your first impression to the judges to be negative.
Oh, this guy.
Yes. You don't want that reaction from judges when they see you or see your name. And I think part of it also, and I've seen this a lot, not just with him but with other players, especially when you're on a team and you're bunking with a team. I think that might be, in my opinion at least, my theory anyway, might be maybe he got worked up, his teammates got him worked up about his games. That's why he came back the next day as opposed to that same day. Excuse me. All worked up. So maybe they told him what the rule was or was supposed to be in their mind, what the correct ruling was or the correct way something should be played. And that may have gotten him worked up the following morning And I,
perhaps
I get it, and that happens. I remember when we went to BAO one year, John was kind of worked up because he played against a battle company, because this is during 7th. He was kind of worked up over his game, and the whole night we were basically doing math because he couldn't believe that the Space Marine player could fit so much stuff into 1,850 points. But when we calculated, when we mathed it all out, we did it like 4 or 5 times, and it was fine. But I can see where sometimes when you lose, especially if you lose a close one, you question like everything, and a lot of times a lot of players don't have they don't have the experience of looking at yourself. They think it's automatically something that their opponent did. They couldn't possibly have done anything wrong. It must have been something their opponent did or didn't do. And a lot of times your teammates might feed into that unknowingly when they're really just trying to help you out. So, but that was the end of a long 2 days. We went into the final 8. We spoke a bit about that. But in terms of the final, we spoke a bit about the final. But I'm curious, Chris, from your perspective in regards to the gameplay between Brandon and Alex, what you thought.
Well, I think that so far as Brandon is concerned, his foresight was really evident in the way that he, from the start, had his strategy down. And looking at the game from my perspective, it was pretty clear that his goal wasn't to try and boots on the ground Alex.
All right.
You know, by his own admission, his list doesn't kill enough. It was to kill the things that could kill his guys so that he wouldn't die. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a really strong strategy to go with. Seeing Alex's play, and we watched Alex's play closely, I think we can all agree.
You know, for a variety of reasons.
Yes. For a variety of reasons. We watched Alex's play very closely. And, you know, so far as his gameplay, particularly in his round 8 match, mm-hmm. I was very impressed with how he was able to manipulate his flyers to block out movement and to continually put himself in threat range for things that he needed to accomplish, which is partially good placement on his part and partially just the sheer maneuverability and power of the Eldar flyers. It's just, they're excellent flyers to manipulate, and he did a really good job of doing that and bringing kind of a stinker unit like the scout banks. Those are things that people aren't expecting, but they do their job really well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you think, and Danny, you can answer this too, do you think experience being at that level or at that stage of the event helps?
Absolutely. It is, I think, something that even a really great player who is, you know, fundamentally strong at the game and has a really strong list can lose games over pretty quickly as if they just simply psych themselves out, right? They just feel they let the pressure get to them and they stop playing the game the way they have been playing. Right. And I think that the more you're in those kind of, you know, you're in the money rounds, right, the more that pressure is off you because you know you've done it before. You know you've been there before, right? You know how to slow down and focus on the process, not the end result. And I think a lot of guys who first time being in the top 8 of a major event, they just think about, oh, my God, I could win this. I can do this. And they're not thinking about what should I be doing in my movement phase right now.
Yeah, we had I believe half of the pool it was their first time in the top 8. For 3 of the players, it was out of the 8. It was their first time. 2 of them, one you could tell was tense.
He was so nervous. He was shaking like a leaf in the wind, man. I mean, I couldn't do it because, you know, I'm a judge. It would be biased, but I had to fight my natural kind of paternal urge to just like go up to him and be like, bro, take 3 deep breaths and focus on your game. You know?
Yeah. He was playing the other person that, it was his first time in the top, in that, at that level of the competition, but that person, that player had won a, had at least been in contention for GTs, before. Right. So he's been on top tables. And the player he faced has always been a relaxed attitude to the game, and that didn't change. That attitude did not change. He did not tense up or anything like that when he played, in that first round. And then the other player actually won his game, the Admech with the Knight, with the Castellan. He actually won because their game was kind of like a first turn wins type of game.
Yeah.
But,
there's always still something to be done, but yeah, his game was definitely, the Admech versus Tau, that definitely whoever went first had a huge advantage.
Yeah.
It's just the way that matchup works.
So with the finals, we know, I don't know if you talked about your view of the finals. You actually had literally a front row seat of the final game between Brandon and Alex.
I did. Although I had a very awkward view because I was sitting down doing record keeping. Mm-hmm. Right. So it wasn't like John, who got to see the table from a wider angle. Like, I was really mostly looking at the sides of these guys and the sides of the table, and from Brandon's perspective more than anything else, mm-hmm. because it was Hammer and Anvil. Right. Long deployment, so I don't remember if it was actually Hammer and Anvil. But, it was...
It might have been Corners.
I think it was Corners, but I was on Brandon's side of the corner, on his, short table edge. And so it was just really weird, seeing it from there, but I mean, the play in general, and I said this to John, but both of the players had agreed, so it wasn't an issue, but like, they were both very loose in their movement phases of where I'm going, I think I'm gonna take this back and move this here instead, and they both agreed to that, which is fine. But it was a little, off-putting at first to see, because, one would expect slightly tighter play. But since they both agreed to it, and I get why, because positioning mattered so much, and they both wanted to have all the time they needed to make smart movement plays, totally get it. But, I mean, for me, what the most impressive thing was really watching that game was seeing two very distinct styles of play with matching lists, mm-hmm. Distinct styles of play go at it, where you had the kind of very aggressive, I'm going to shoot you off the table, I'm going to, control the tempo of the game through aggression, in Alex Harris's list and his kind of demeanor. And that seems to be how he plays. It's about controlled aggression.
Yes.
And Brandon, Brandon's is a methodical, slow, and not like slow player, but methodical, precise in his movements, precise in his game plan. And he has a list that's designed to win more on the scenarios than it is just to blow you off the table. It can if you bring a bad list, but against a really solid list, the Castellan is not going to do enough to win him a game.
Yeah.
And, Brandon, executed his plan immediately. And, it was really just, it was pretty crazy to watch, because I'll fully admit that the first round, after Alex's first turn, I was like, oof, that's kind of rough. Mm-hmm. And I thought I fell into the trap of like, you got to kill stuff to win at 40K.
And I think that Alex's previous game primed him for that mentality, because he was playing an aggressive, punchy, killy.
It was
the Admech list. And I actually really like that list, by the way. I thought, so far as Castellan list goes,
it's unique.
It was,
for sure.
It was definitely unique. I was glad to see it succeed as far as it did. But, the player in command of that army had I need to be aggressive, I need to push forward mentality. And the list was geared towards that. And a lot of the Castellan type lists do that sort of thing.
Right.
So I'm pretty sure that Alex, coming out of this win where he's going against a very aggressive player, was a little on the wrong foot when he started his game against Brandon. I mean, his first clue should have been Brandon being like, no, I don't want the first turn. I'm not going to try to seize.
Right.
That should have been his first clue. It's like, what, maybe I need to play a little bit more coy like this. Instead, he does exactly what Brandon wants him to do. He sticks one of his scat bike units out in the open to get shot to death. Those scat bikes, if they had been alive in the later turns, Brandon wouldn't have had the infantry to score his final points.
No, so not at all.
He kind of played right into what Brandon wanted him to do right from the very start.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. And I mean, it was you could see it in turn two that Alex started to realize, like, oh crap, I really, really, really need to kill this infantry. And then again, he still went after the Castellan, trying to take it down when, you know, he really probably should have accepted that his planes weren't going to do him that much in the late game, and he needed to focus fire on whittling all of those squads down.
Yeah.
And just abusing fire and fade, right? Like, just, you know, the most important thing he had was his scat, his, you know, second scat bike unit, and he needed to just fire and fade that thing constantly.
And he had the right idea trying to take out the indirect fire models.
Right.
And he would have been much better served, I think, you know, this is the problem with the Castellan. One of the many problems with the Castellan is that even with a degraded damage table, it can still actually be kind of a threat, you know? It kind of really can be a threat. So there's you can't just leave it alone. You have to do something with it. But failing to turn over and kill it earlier in the game certainly caused a lot of trouble. And then, you know, taking into account the fact that the Brandon, the way he positioned, the way he placed, he made it hard for the psychic powers that need to go off to get the extra hurt on the Castellan off. Like, the distance, he couldn't get in the distance, and that was part of Brandon's intelligent placement as well.
Right.
So that's something that, you know, I think, you know, has to be stated as well, is that Brandon knew that the Castellan had to go. It wasn't the key to his strategy, his infantry was. Right. But even with that in mind, like, you have to deal with the Castellan, and he knows that. That's why it's in the list. You know, it's not because he thinks he can just outlast people without it. It's in there because you have to deal with it.
Well, you also just always, no matter what, you need a list. Well, you need threat in a list, right? You need to be able to actually kill your opponent's models.
Yeah, but even if you can't, you know, the Castellan's just so juicy a target. I had, there's an observation that I had when I used to play back in 7th edition. There's the Angel's Fury Spearhead Detachment. It was a Blood Angel Detachment that involved 3 Storm Ravens with OPSEC Marines that would come in from reserve turn blood.
Yeah.
There were 3 Storm Ravens. They're all identically equipped, but the one that was painted like Death Company took the most fire. It's psychological, right? And that's the kind of the point that I'm making, is that it's kind of a psychological thing. And the Castellan does the same thing. It just does it so much better.
Castellan is good. News at 11.
Well, in other news, water wet.
Plus, many people make note of the fact that he lost the Castellan on turn 3. But if for those of us that remember and that were there, at SoCal Open, he played against Eldar, not with the Flyers, but just Eldar with Wave Serpents and so other stuff. But he went second, and he actually lost the Castellan on turn 1, and he still won that game,
yeah.
So he's used to losing the Castellan. It's not a big deal for him.
You don't need a Castellan as your crutch if you can still stand on one leg and keep balance, you know, and especially if that leg constitutes a bunch of tiny little guardsmen.
Unlike John.
Oh, man.
Wow.
He merely embraced the salt. I was born next to a lake full of it.
So as we discussed before, Brandon wins. If you have an Amazon Prime subscription, especially, you can sign up and subscribe to the Warhammer TV so you can watch that game. There's plenty of interviews with Brandon. There's at least 3 that I know of. One of them from Forge of Narrative.
That's right. He was on our show.
Where he talks about his games and his philosophy about the game and how he maintains his cool during when he does lose his Castellan on turn 1. Things like that, but
he's just a robot.
some of the things that came up from that weekend.
He talks about that, actually. That's pretty funny.
That's what we call him.
Skynet.
I finally saw him emote that last, when we were telling the scores. It was scary. I was scared. I'm not going to lie. I thought the robot revolution was at hand.
He's like, oh my God, they've learned emotion.
Yes. Learned to kill. Some of the things that came up, or one of the things that came up I want to talk about, especially when talking about, when I mentioned about the team that I, in my opinion, the team may have gotten that one player riled up, is, during that tournament, especially that last game, there became more of almost a mob mentality at the game, in that,
The crowd
very much wanted Brandon to win for various reasons. If you don't know why, then just look at last year's London GT, and you'll probably know why. And people were coming up to us throughout that game and telling us about, hey, did you know this? Did you know this? And why is he doing this? What's that? Because unfortunately, people couldn't hear the players talk.
Right.
They could only go off what they were watching without knowing what the players were saying. Luckily, John was essentially there the whole time. So John knew what they were doing or what they were talking about. And, a lot of things were happening and people were so amped up for the game, which is both good and bad. I'm not saying we shouldn't have a large crowd vested in the game. But I think we're getting to the point where we may need to find a way to, I don't know. Someone mentioned stadium seating for next year, so I don't know what we're going to do. But I think there needs to be something because people get a bit amped up and people are reaching over to players' tables and putting things on the table to kind of, mentally throw them off balance, things like that. More or less interfering with the game is essentially what they were doing. So I don't know if that may be an issue we have to address for next year. I don't know about you, Chris, or Danny, what you guys thought of. Well, Danny, you were sitting at the table, so you got to know how much of it you caught. But I know
Chris, I didn't get a lot of it because I was just so focused on their game and making sure I was recording everything correctly. So Chris, I definitely did not hear any of that.
Yeah, there was a lot of like taps on the shoulders and little whispers about.
Yeah, I got none of that because I was at the table. So,
Chris,
I was spared that.
What was your experience? At least through the round of eight, going on Sunday, especially, not so much on the first 2 days, which is when you should tell us, but on the last day, your experience with more or less like almost like a mob mentality or groupthink.
Well, it's proven science that you get people together and the collective brain cells decrease. science is science. So far as this applies to 40K, I kind of feel like Alex dug his own grave in that respect so far as the court of public opinion.
Right.
And I don't think that people are not justified in feeling the way that they do. However, the time and place for it, where it becomes a distraction to the players, is a problem. We had one instance in round seven.
Yeah.
I believe it was round seven. Of course, and we tried to wall everybody off, right? And people kept on taking the chairs and things. I really think that we need to do a better job of cordoning off the finals from people in a way that involves more than just chairs that people take to sit on. Because if, as a player, that would annoy the crap out of me. That would absolutely, as a judge, it drove me mad. Even on day two, when I had to ask people to get out of the way so that I could move through the aisle and address issues, like get out of the way.
Okay. Yeah.
But the mob mentality in particular, I think it would have been a lot worse had Alex won, even if he had won legitimately. the crowd positive response, maybe there's an equation for this, inverse square root divided by zero of absolute chaos, would have been bad. I would hate to have been there in that situation.
Right.
Yeah. And I love that people are getting invested in games. And I don't want this to turn into golf. Oh gosh, please no. But there does need to be a certain amount of just watch and see what happens that people right. need to accept. And when the game was over and the cheers were going up, I thought that was great. I thought it was fantastic. The game kind of played out exactly how I expected. So there's that picture of me as I'm going
happy
around.
You just bought Sanguinius.
Yes. I mean, honestly, you guys should just be grateful that I managed to continue judging with that sitting in a box in my room. And yes, it is pretty much finished, and I'm looking at it right now.
I was going to ask about it towards the end.
So, even so, all joking aside, it was very vindicating to be able to kind of analyze where the game was going and see that it paid off in such a cool way, and not in a blowout kind of a way. So I think people were right to be excited, but so far as like during the game, telling John or yelling at John and me, I was standing right next to him.
Yeah.
That, and I actually pointed out to John that Brandon had nudged the piece of terrain accidentally. Said, okay, well, we need to recenter that objective. To say that Alex is a cheater and to disrupt the game state like that is not appropriate. I didn't think that was helpful, and that people kind of need to mind their own business. We were handling it. It was being handled.
Yeah, and John was aware of it because they told him, basically. They talked to him about it. And that's the thing. People don't hear that because they're too busy, because they're not mic'd, you know, for, and, you know, there's enough ambient noise that you can't really hear him talk. Mm-hmm. You're getting kind of close to talk. So, but I think that's just something we'll have to address, for next year, and hopefully we will come up with something that'll be able to basically please everybody and make it a much better event.
We need the 40K stage, a bowl with an arena in the center.
Sure. Yeah. You can have a Thunderdome.
Yep.
That'd be great.
I know there's a team. I think it might be local to Utah, but it might not be Golden Throne Thunderdome or something like that.
I've never heard that name.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Mario, one of the Warhammer heroes, he's on that team I'm remembering correctly. But, yeah, Golden Throne Thunderdome sounds like a great way to cap off LVO 2020 Reese copyright trademark.
I would sell it. Sell it to you cheap.
I'm co-opting their name and trademarking it so that I can benefit from it.
There you go. It's capitalism at its finest. Mm. So with all that behind us now, looking forward, how do each of you think the code of conduct fared overall? Let's start with Danny.
I think it went pretty well at the end of the day. I mean, I really didn't need to pull it out too often, but, you know, when I did, it was exceedingly helpful. And a lot of players, I think, again, the ones who we wouldn't have had problems with anyway, do all the stuff in there to begin with, right? They're conscientious, polite, enjoyable people to play. And the people who really do need to read that did and knew they couldn't, they knew that we were watching and that we were empowered to do something about their behavior. So they played nice, right? Like I think they moderated their behavior, far more, than I think previous years, because this was probably the best year in terms of dealing with people and dealing with players getting upset about things. Mm-hmm. So I think in that sense, it was very successful. And I've, you know, heard the rumblings online about people being like, well, it was weaponized and things like that. And I just don't think there's any real proof of that, because it's, you know, it's not like we gave out yellows and didn't record them. You know, and it's also this idea of, if people are like, oh, well, he was, you know, doing this and saying this and making me re-roll things, it's like, well, then that's on you to call a judge and be like, he keeps saying he can't see my rolls and I'm rolling in the middle of the table, right? And so we can get involved and actually, you know, apply the COC in the way it's meant to be, which is to stop players from taking advantage of anything in the rule set, including the COC itself. So, you know, I think the small amount of kind of whining I've heard online really does come down to people either A, not knowing what they're talking about and just kind of mirroring something that they heard from somebody else, or someone who felt genuinely slighted in their game but did nothing to actually remedy the situation or looking for someone to blame. So overall, I think the COC is great, and I think, you know, it'll get refined as all things get refined through, you know, use and experience. But I think it's been a really great help, and I'm glad that, you know, if nothing, whether we were involved with it or not, I'm glad it exists. So I think it's good for the game. I think it helps the game grow in a competitive environment.
Yeah. Chris, your thoughts?
Well, not to echo too much of what Danny said, because I do think that there are certain areas where the code of conduct needs some improvement, and I don't think there's ever going to be a state that it isn't going to need some kind of refining or perfecting. Mm-hmm. But I don't want it to get too much bigger than it already is.
Right.
So how to accomplish that besides shrinking the font size? is going to be an ongoing challenge. But speaking from experience from previous years versus this year, it was much better. Like the overall game hall experience, the judging experience, we mostly had to deal with rules issues, not people issues.
Yes.
Right.
I think that should be. Yeah, that is exactly how it should be. And yes, we had to hand out a few yellow cards. We never had to hand out any reds. Sorry, Age of Sigmar.
Yeah.
But the code of conduct worked. And there are a few things that I think we need to fix, you know, regarding the chess clock, in lining up the intent with what it actually says. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be important. I was joking about the hygiene thing earlier, but I'm really not joking about the hygiene thing.
No, I didn't know what you guys were talking about, and then around four or five is when it actually hit me, and it hit me like a wall. So no, yeah. I agree.
So there's going to be some flexibility involved, and the fact that I think that the biggest weakness of the code of conduct right now is that people are still getting used to it to the point where they're not coming forward when they need to get us involved in situations where they feel like maybe this is getting exploited. Well, maybe it is. Bring us over and let us decide. And because honestly, this is kind of where I come from. If you don't feel like it's good enough to call the judges over and ask a question about, it probably isn't.
Right.
Either that or your conviction is low and you're letting your opponent bully you. We can't stop that at every single table.
No.
We can't. At some point, you've got to buck up and deal with the situation that you're dealt with, especially in a big tournament where you round up with people from all over the world. Sometimes things aren't going to work out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
So, and accept rulings gracefully.
Yes.
Because we aren't there to kill the fun. I mean, it sounds fun to kill the fun, right? Ooh, power trip. You know, what happens, you know, the problem with the power trip is that you always end up falling because you just tripped. So.
Wow.
I mean, just, you know, ask any totalitarian government from the 20th century. that is how the power trip do. So, I feel like the code of conduct works. I think it can work better. I want to see it improve and continue to refine itself. And I want to see more people adopting it and, helping us make it the best thing that it can be, because we're out here to make the game experience better for everybody.
Right.
And I think the LVO proved that can happen.
Yeah. For my end, again, and Danny and I have been doing it from the start, well, not from the start, but from when we first asked us. So Danny and I have been doing it the longest.
5 years, right?
I believe so.
This was our fourth or fifth year?
Something like that.
Yeah.
It seems like a long time.
Yeah.
This is easily the easiest one we've done so far. I wasn't called any names, which is a first. Yeah. And many more people apologized for their behavior to me than called me names, actually. So I feel it's worth it. Like Chris said, I think the key to making it work and making it more effective is for people to basically, and we talk about this all the time on our show, is to basically to if they have a concern, to speak up.
Yeah, you know, advocate for yourself.
Yeah, they have to advocate for yourself. Call a judge over. Don't be afraid to call a judge over. It doesn't make you a jerk. You just want to be sure things are being done correctly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can't really, if you don't call us over and you have a bad game, I mean, I don't know how much you can put that on us when we're readily available, walking up and down the aisles. I mean, there were times where there was that time I was running around looking for water. Nobody called me once. I ran around the whole hall like twice.
Right.
You know, I think, I don't know how many miles, did you log in, Danny?
Oh, I didn't have my Fitbit this year. So, but, well, you know, judging by my legs, a lot.
According to my phone, I think on day one, it was like almost 8 miles. And I don't walk as much as Danny does.
Yeah, I like walking the world.
Yeah. So it's not like we weren't available. We probably passed you by multiple times.
Yeah, the blister that is still on my pinky toe says I was there.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
I mean, that's the thing is, like, I try to be as proactive as I can in the sense of, like, when I'm walking the aisles, if someone makes eye contact with me, I, like, say hi, ask how things are going, are they having fun, right? Yeah. Just so, you know, and a couple of times people will be like, oh, since you're here, can you answer this, right? Which is good. That's kind of why I do that. But, you know, like I said, I can't, it's just the reality of if something's going on in your game and you're not sure how something should be played, or you feel like your opponent's taking advantage of something, and if you call us over and we don't do anything about it, or we do something wrong, then that's on us. But if they're doing something, they could be flat out cheating you and telling you that they're, you know, that their hammerheads can overwatch, right? And as part of the greater good. But you don't tell us that. Guess what? That's your fault, right? Like, that's just at the end of the day, you have to take ownership of the fact that you felt that something shady was going on, but you did nothing to address it. Right. Like, and that's just, sorry, that's a you issue, not an us issue. And no matter what is written on a piece of paper, there's nothing we can do to stop that.
Yeah, you can't come to us the next day and tell us. I mean, you can, but all we can do is kind of watch out for it as opposed to do something about it right then and there at your table.
Right.
And then you give the correct response to whatever they're trying to do or whatever they are doing. And that leads us to the second question I wanted to ask about. How effective do you guys think the card system was? Chris?
Well, I think the card system worked. And for all the jokes that we had about respect my authority, I think that the ongoing card system that's being planned, I don't know if that's something that we want to put a whole lot of.
It's one of the things we thought about. I know some people want something like that, but I don't know if we're actually going to do it yet. There's other things going on that we kind of want to address first, and then we can probably talk about that afterwards as a group in the TO group.
Okay, we'll table that for now then.
Yeah, I think it's something people have asked about though.
Yeah. So I think that the way that we went about it, where we each had our book, we would enter the book into the log, and the way that we were able to organizationally track it, I think was very good. Ideally, you know, if we're doing things with the technologies and stuff, mm-hmm. we would be able to just type it into a shared Excel spreadsheet. But of course, we would all need a device that was hooked up to the convention center Wi-Fi and all that. And who knows how much that, I mean, look at how much they charge for water. Who knows how much having a Wi-Fi access for the judges would cost? I mean, we don't want to bury Reese in debt after all.
Right.
But there are certain optimizations I think that can be done to the process, but I think the process worked. And I think that our communication so far as who's getting a yellow card, why, I felt like for every yellow card that I handed out, which wasn't a lot, there was a conversation that I had with another judge about it. And of course, John, adorable John, I love that you're not here and I can just tease you about it.
Adorable John.
Adorable John. He just was like, oh, do you want me to do it? It's like, no, I'm a big boy. I can write my own yellow cards.
No, John just likes the conflict. He's a high conflict personality.
Yeah.
I love you, man. Yeah. But joking aside, I think that we all had the conversation, this is what's going to happen, and then we checked each other.
Right.
And I think that was what made giving out a yellow card more successful than it would have been had it just been one person. One person running a GT, who knows what's going to happen there?
Yeah.
Until it becomes more widely adopted, which it should be, and we need to get that data.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually a discussion, like a larger discussion in regards to, like I mentioned earlier, almost like a shared database or something. I don't know. Like I said, still we're still at the beginning stage of it. So this was the first, like almost like a test run, which LVO has become essentially our test run for everything. I more or less, with the help of you guys, created this card system, mainly because of my experience with soccer and the way it kind of marries easily with the GW stuff because of the spirit of the game, things like that. And the thing I like about it is the fact that you can always use spirit of the game as a reason or when people, like with the clock. The clock's the perfect example. Technically, the person we carded was correct. They could have essentially slow played using the clock, but it's not really in the spirit of the game, which is why they got the card. It actually helps us identify issues we may have with either the code of conduct itself or in this case, the clock rules, which we'll probably change or adjust, just for numbers, for people that like the numbers in regards to the cards, not counting the 50 yellows we gave out. For missing the deadline, we gave out about 20 yellows with about, I think there's about 5 of them that are actually double yellows, so we actually gave about 15 yellows, some more serious than others, but I think we gave out about 5 double yellows, or someone earned 2 yellows over the course of the weekend. I did notice there were a few I ended up not giving out, based on the response of the player, where I got clarification as to what they said or did or whatever, then it made more sense, so I didn't give the yellow. I think this year we were a bit, in my opinion, lenient in giving out the yellows, which is fine for the first year, but that's not to say we would be more strict in the following years. We'll see. It depends depends on the ref.
And it kind of depends on the players, too.
Oh yeah, that's. I mean, it, just like in soccer, some refs are more quick to give out the yellows than others. So there may be judges that are more lenient than others, but that, I think that's something that coming down the pipe we may have to keep an eye out for, because if someone's giving an excessive amount of yellows, more than normal, then there might be that would raise a flag as to, well, maybe this judge is maybe a little over anxious with the yellows.
Yeah.
A little overzealous.
This kind of ties into something that I feel like is going to be important for judges in the future. And that has to do with, we come at the code of conduct with this idea that we need to raise the standard of play, and that every player as an individual is responsible for improving the overall state of the game in terms of a play experience for themselves and also for their opponents. I think that the code of conduct starts down that path. We're on a good first step. The judges also need an accountability system.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And we can't just, as much as it is each and every single player's responsibility. It is also each and every single judge's responsibility to aspire towards complete neutrality, to common sense, to a lack of bias, even if that's a lack of bias against certain people, particularly, you know, on personal levels. I mean, there are players that I have disagreed with who it always ends up being an uncomfortable game experience. But when I'm judging, you put that aside. You know, and I'd like to think that I can do that fairly objectively. Who knows? It's why it's good to have somebody else to kind of check yourself against.
Yeah.
No, it is. I mean, a big part of that too is just navigating, like, learning how to differentiate the nuances of having a personal bias against someone and then having actual data on their behavior, right? And being able to impartially say, this person, I may think they're a shady player versus there's definitive proof that this person has a history of certain behaviors, you know?
Yeah. No. And hopefully we'll get to that point fairly soon. Because eventually we want to, as part of, you know, as helping Reese out and doing the LVO, and as we're seeing, especially after this last one where at one point, I think it was the semifinals, had like 13 or 15,000 people watching because it was on the front page of Twitch. You know, I think that having a more standardized, format for judges as well as players will help to bring it more in line with almost like an e-sport. Maybe not to that level, but something, you know, building to it eventually.
No, I mean, I agree. I'm definitely one of the skeptics of the idea that 40K could ever kind of pull in the numbers that even, like, not popular esports games bring in. Like, just because a game takes 3 hours, right? Most humans don't have that, you know, kind of attention span.
Well, plus we're a niche of a niche.
Yeah, you don't want to know how long I've been staring at Sanguinius. To be fair, I was painting it. You kind of need to look at it.
It's all right. I've been painting my Gene Stealer Colt stuff all this time, and it's helps me get stuff done. I mean, it's just the reality. If we want the kind of idea that this game can be played at an actual competitive level, then there has to be standardized sets of behaviors for both players and judges, right? Players need to feel confident knowing that if they are going to an event, that a judge is going to behave in a reasonable and standardized manner, and that if someone deviates from that, there is a recourse for that player, right? If we do end up, because it does happen, we hear those horror stories every now and then of TOs who have their personal bias, whose friends always seem to win something, and, you know, who make bad calls mostly based on they don't like the person that they're dealing with. Right. You know, we need to make sure that if that happens,
get around.
I mean, we need to make sure that if that happens, we have a mechanism in place to be like, well, we can come down on them, or be able to promise people, for the most part, if you come to this event, that's not going to happen to you. These judges have some level of training and standardization, right, where you know what you're expecting.
Yeah, hopefully we can get something like that fairly soon. But for right now, like Chris mentioned, it's kind of like word of mouth. Not everybody's in like all the groups, so I know I'm in a lot. So when I hear stuff, I usually take notes about players or events or people just to keep track of. I know John does too. We're in a couple groups that actually let us know stuff all the time. And that's why we bring it up in our chat, just to discuss. But even though we probably will never get the numbers of a e-sport, I think for what it is, because you have to remember, we're getting 13 to 15,000 people watching. There's technically there's only 10,000 people registered this past year for
ITC.
And that's not even active players. You're probably really getting half of that, or two thirds of that actually play more than just the one game they happen to play.
Right, the one tourney they stumbled into that was ITC,
and that they don't want to play anymore.
Yeah.
So you're getting almost two or three times the numbers that are signed up that are actually watching. I think as more tournaments evolve, I think you're going to see more varieties of different ways of watching the game. And this leads into my more or less the next question is what we think, at least going forward, of the game, in terms of, in this regard, as a spectator sport. I know I have an idea about what to do. I know Chris mentioned golf, that takes it more like golf, where you
pick, don't want that.
No, in terms of that, you pick three different games.
Right.
And if you're able to, and it would cost money to do this, you can maybe switch between the different games like a golf does. So you're not watching just the one game. And let's say the one game gets boring or gets to a certain point where the game's over. You know the game's over. Everybody knows the game's over. The players know. So instead of just sitting there for like a half hour, an hour, not watching anything, you can switch to another game where maybe it's a little closer, a little more exciting to watch. So that's where I think it needs to go. Personally, I mean,
the Red Zone channel model.
Basically, yes. I mean, I know the guys over at the Honest Wargamer is doing something similar in that they have like a sideline reporter, and they use a Telestrator, I think.
I mean, something that would help. It's just expensive, so it's hard to do it without. Some kind of major backing, or someone willing to make the investment is to have things like a Telestrator, is to have addition, like the person walking the beat, right? The sideline reporter. I mean, my idea that I thought would help in terms of the spectator aspect of it is if you're not going to have multiple games, like let's say it's like the Brandon Grant, Alex Harrison top table for all the marbles, you can also have, I think Kill Team is a great spectator form of 40K because it's so fast and things happen kind of all the time,
right,
that you could have, especially if you linked the events together, maybe the top table for a 40K, for a Kill Team game, that you can intersperse to of okay, well, the movement, they're just doing some tallying right now, or, the players are discussing something, and especially if they're not mic'd up, let's go see what's happening at Kill Team. Oh, shit, look at that.
Yeah, especially with the alternate activation, it moves a lot faster.
I mean, if GW was actually really super serial about trying to kind of tap into the way that the gaming world is moving, which is to, making sure your games can be viewed as a spectator sport, then they need to consider alternating activation. Right, because that's the only way to really make one 40K game in its entirety watchable for the average person. I mean, if you love 40K and you're an avid fan and you know the ins and outs, then you can watch a full 2.5 hour game and be enthralled if it's a good game. But if you're just like, oh, what is this? I don't know, it's on the front page of Twitch. Oh, that's kind of a cool looking model. Like, it's going to be really hard, right, for a player to access that.
Right.
So, I think if GW actually wants that, which I don't necessarily think that they do, or if they do, I don't know if they quite grasp what it's going to require, but I think that would be something that would, I think, have to come down the pipe at some point, which is also where most modern game design or contemporary game design is going, right, is to more alternating activations.
What are they using? Death of Titanicus, is it alternating activation?
No, I think it's still the... Oh, no, it is alternating, I think.
Yeah, the original Epic and the following editions were all alternating activation.
Yeah, because Death of Titanicus is basically Epic Second Edition cleaned up.
Yeah.
It's not really all that different. And, you know, kill teams alternating activation, what is it, Shadespire or Underworlds, whatever they call it now,
yes,
is, you know, is alternating activations.
Everything except, you know, the main game.
Yeah, and I get why they do that, because it's something they've always done, and, mm-hmm. you know, it's, especially with a game designed around armies, where you can have 20, 30 units, right, or 40, 50 units separate, like individual units in a game, it can be hard to balance that with the idea of alternate activations. But I think, again, my thought is if GW really wants to kind of embrace stream culture and get the product out to more people, mm-hmm. then they need to consider alternating activations and whatever comes down the pipeline in however many years before they decide to do ninth.
Chris, your thoughts on the future of like streaming the game, or what would make it better,
more powerful? So far as game streaming goes, being able to have more perspectives, and I think this is something that's been improving a lot since it first started, but I think getting in there, into the table where things are and what's going on, I think is going to need to step up. And when you're watching a visual medium, I mean, we're lucky in that in our hobby, hopefully people are painting while they're watching stuff.
Right.
But if we're looking at true spectatorship, we need more than just a top-down view. We need something a little bit more dynamic.
Yeah.
I feel like that's going to be the biggest selling point, especially if we're trying to bring in a wider audience. I mean, Twitch is just immersed with tons and tons of video game players.
Yeah.
And video games have that nice payoff. A game finishes in 30 minutes. I don't know if you guys watch StarCraft at all. I love watching competitive StarCraft. But it's fast paced. There's always something going around. The judges are in control the commentators always in control of the camera. They show you what to look at and where. They're talking about things that are happening as they're happening, and it's interactive. And kind of to Danny's point, you know, 40K right now doesn't really do that. But I think that if we approached it and the commentary with more of a multi-angled thing, I mean, you just look at like a football game. They've got all these weird graphics and people drawing arrows on things, and we have a little bit of that now. But if, as someone is moving a unit up and you're explaining why they're moving the unit up, and you go into the nuance of the distance, like if you could get something like a tool, right, that could, you draw a point at the edge of somebody's base and draw a line, you know, touch it, 2 points equal a line, right? Mm-hmm. And it calculates how far away something actually is. Or like little tools and things like that. And I mean, this is just an idea. I don't know exactly how something like that could be adequately implemented or coded. That is for a much more computer savvy minded people than myself. But I think that's kind of the direction that we need to go, is if we can't increase the speed of the gameplay, and I'm not sure that alternating activations is going to do that personally, mm-hmm. then we need to step up the interactive part of it. The part that makes people like, I want to watch what's happening.
Right.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, it would be great to have, I mean, really, it's just hard to think about how you would do it without getting the player's way, but even just kind of a floating camera that someone carries around on a frickin' selfie stick or something, where they can, like, get in and show you kind of, like, what does this game look like from Brandon's perspective? What does this game look like from Alex's perspective right now? Right? And, you know, show the game from different angles, be able to, the telestrator, being able to draw, point things out, you got to have the stats man, you got to have the color man. I think you also have to have the newbie, right? Like you have to have someone who can ask those questions that, you know, a newer person who has little to no familiarity with the game, the questions they would ask so that the commentators can answer.
Right. As you are again.
Yeah.
So, other than that, I don't think there's much else. Chris, we know you're working on Sanguinius.
Yes.
You're lovingly working on Sanguinius.
Yep, I've actually got, I'm working on a bunch of stuff for 30K right now because I'm doing that at Adepticon. Okay. I don't even know, sadly, if I'll be able to use him because there's the book's just been delayed so long. They've put a cutoff for when the pre-orders go live. Right. And if it's not done by the 27th, then I'm probably going to be SOL. So if I do end up being able to use him, if I am able to use him, then I have 20 Jump Assault Marines and a bunch of other things to get ready. And if I can't use them, I've got 45 that I need to get put together at least. And that's going to be exciting.
That'll keep you busy.
Yeah, it will, and it has.
Is there anything else you're working on or have planned?
Well, if you don't mind me doing a little bit of a plug for a sure. charity thing we've got going.
Yeah.
Plug away.
Yeah, next weekend we're starting off March Madness in War Games for Warriors, which is, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the charity event we did here in Utah in 2017, but we raised several thousand dollars for the Fisher House Foundation, which finds housing for family members of people in the military who are injured so that they don't have to worry about where they're staying or what they're eating. They can just go to the hospital where their family members are being taken care of and focus on healing.
Right.
And it's one of the best charities out there for that sort of thing. So we're raising money for them and for the Children's Miracle Network the whole month of March, starting with the 40K GT next weekend. And we're going to be streaming that on Extra Life as well. If people are interested in watching some of the stream games or even just donating to the raffle, we've got an entire Age of Sigmar Auric army that's going to be raffled off. Or if you want to sponsor a player, like last year, someone sponsored me and that every battle point I earned, they donated a dollar. If that's something you want to do, like anybody can get involved. So I would encourage you guys to, support the event from all over. We have 40K next weekend. We have Infinity the weekend after. We have Age of Sigmar the weekend after.
I don't know what Infinity is. I don't know.
Fair enough.
I know what it is because I see it on sale for 20% off at our store. So,
So we're involving, and there's more people like down in Florida, for example. We're partnering with some people down there as well because this is all put together by Mario Capizzo, who was one of the first Warhammer heroes. Mm-hmm. And he's putting it on again. He's a veteran himself, very passionate about the cause. I'm happy to be able to support him and spread the word.
Okay.
So my involvement has been, you know, much less than his in terms of organizing. I've helped him find places and talk to people. He has actually done all the legwork. He even got our local hockey team to sponsor.
Oh, wow. Nice.
So kudos to you, Mario, and so happy to be able to support you in this event and encourage everybody else to do that too.
We'll have links to it in our show notes and our Facebook page when the episode goes up. So
awesome.
Danny, what are you up to?
So
Gene Stealer Cult.
Yeah, 2019 is going to be my year of the bug. I'm just going to focus pretty much entirely on Tyranid / Gene Stealer Cult since. So right now I am literally painting my kitbashed Abominants together.
Oh my god. I'm sure John's going to love those.
Oh, I did it just for John. I did it just for John. You know, I'm trying to make them look at least good. At least I'm painting them. But yeah, I mean, that's really it. I will, once I get kind of my GSC done, I settle in on a tournament list that I'm going to run consistently. I'm probably going to go back to that list because pretty much all my Tyranids are painted. And kind of touch them up and try and get them a little prettier since especially on my infantry, there's definitely like just, I think I wanted to just get my, you know, 20,000 points plus painted, so I didn't take a lot of care with them.
Uh-huh.
And it's not that they're bad, it's just they're not good, or they're not great, so I think once I settle in on tournament list, I'm just going to go back to that list and really just do things like doing all, you know, making sure all the lines are clean, highlighting everything, right? Like just, you know, probably doing something special with the bases, right? And just try and make sure I have a really nice, pretty tournament Tyranid army.
Yeah. So more or less the same, because you play. I only know you playing Tyranid. So
I play Chaos, and you know,
you played Orcs for one game,
for one tournament. I have those. I still want to finish building and painting all of it. Okay. At some point, but that's like a longer term nostalgia project. I don't think I'm going to be too excited about any armies until we eventually get like a World Eaters army with Angron. Then I'll,
okay,
that might persuade me away from the bugs, but especially because GSC are good now, and it's nice to have good allies to put in with my bugs.
Okay. Yeah, I've for a while, I mentioned before on the show that
a bug is so good.
I mentioned before on the show that I was in kind of like a funk where I didn't really know what to play. Kind of burnt out on the knights. But with the recent Vigilus book, kind of, and now with the recent
Black Legion,
the sneak peek from the LVO, I've started working on some of the Black Legion stuff that I have, but and aren't going to be really be updated, because from the sneak peeks we've been seeing, it looks like they may be updating a lot of the older kits.
Right.
Along with Abaddon, Obliterators. It looks like the Chaos Space Marine box, or maybe even the Havocs.
Ooh.
So, from the sneak peeks, and maybe even the Possessed. So, like right now, as we're recording, I just finished building two of my Hellblades, which are the little fighters that they're only like 140 points.
Yeah, they're pretty good though for their price point.
Yeah, they're just there to like what's his name, like Alex did, just to kind of block movement and force people to go where I want them to go as opposed to where they want to go.
Right.
And build a Leviathan Dreadnought. So other than that, I'm just kind of gearing up, stocking up in black and gold, on black and gold paint for the army. I will mention.
Yeah, I'm. I can't condone the following of Chaos or any of those filthy associations, but I, from a desire to have a worthy foe and all that, I wish you luck in your Black Legion questing this. I actually like, out of all the Chaos factions, I think that, you know, like may be a strong term, but I the Black
Admire.
Legion just seems to have it together more than anybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, Nurgle, they just kind of seem to be sucking on their thumbs, and what's sucking on their thumbs is a mouth that's on their stomach all the time. You know, who knows what's going on, and who really wants to know what's going on with the Emperor's Children in Slaanesh? And then, you know, the World Eaters just wish they were blood angels. They're artificial blood angels. We've got that non-GMO rage. I think that the Black Legion just kind of presents the most threat, and it, I hope that the things that come out make Chaos fun to fight.
Yeah, I mean, I've played Black Legion since I first started playing X amount of years ago. So
come on, there's two X's. We know that. You can be honest. It's two X's for me too.
Yeah, it's two X's for me as well.
High number of X's. Yeah. So
I don't talk about my one X.
So I'm looking forward to seeing what the book entails. Hopefully they'll get some. Hopefully they'll come out with a Black Legion book, but we'll see. I'll just be happy to have a new Abaddon with hopefully new rules.
Yeah,
but I'm so excited to kill him.
Well, I don't know if you noticed, but my Facebook profile pic is Horus, just for you.
I did notice that actually. In our group chat, I was like, I know what you're about.
I don't know what you're talking about. I just like Horus.
And Horace
people,
did nothing
people
wrong.
People make a big deal out of a guy who lived like literally 10 minutes longer than Sanguinius did.
That's like, no, oh man,
he's like, oh man, he really killed Sanguinius. Oh, look at that. It's like, and he's dead.
Yes.
Yep.
Good job, folks.
He didn't just die. He got his soul literally obliterated.
Yeah, there's like nothing.
He'll be back. If they bring Sanguinius
even
back,
his clones were confused. Like, when they woke up, the clones were just like, oh, what's going on?
He got his ass kicked so hard, his clones were dizzy.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened.
I hate you, Daddy.
Just speaking facts.
I'm excited about that. Sitting right now, I just built 2 Hellblades, getting ready to build the Leviathan Dreadnought. I want to stock up on Possess, but I'm pretty sure I'm just gonna have to buy the new ones because they'll probably look better.
Yes, I promise you, if there's new Possess, they'll look better.
I do.
I would just get the Galvor back from Forge World, honestly. If you want some Possess to look cool, there's nothing better than those, in my opinion.
Yeah,
it's out right now.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I'll see what they look like, and then I'll decide which way I want to go. But I think I want to do a lot of, especially once we see what the sorcerer guy, who's the master of possessed or whatever his special title is. Hopefully, he'll be able to buff them in a way that'll be actually useful.
Making sure they can actually get to something in combat.
Well, that's what I have Dreadclaws for.
There's something to do with that new demon engine, too. It's supposed to buff summoned units or something.
Which, I guess...
summoned or possessed or whatever.
I guess FU word bearers, I guess.
Yeah. Or maybe it's their apology note to word bearers.
I guess.
Here, guys, get
word
better.
Bearers deserve no apology.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I'm excited for Shadow Spear because I do have a Primaris army I'm building also, so...
Oh, that's a pretty good value then for you.
Yeah.
That box.
I might actually have to get 2 because my brother wants half of the Space Marine half, so we're going to split one half and they'll probably get 1 just for me.
Nice.
So, other announcements?
I just thought it would be really cool to do a Black Legion scheme where they have the black but kind of like that beetle carapace look with the iridescent.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Kind of maybe more like an oil slick in a parking lot. Something like that.
Yeah, that's way above my paint level, so no.
I'm going to look into that. That might be fun.
You have fun doing that. I'm already halfway done.
Really sinister as they die.
You don't want them cartoon evil like they've been for the last 30 years? Since we're talking about announcements, for those that don't know, we apparently I'm running another GT in April. In LA. So if you're in LA, last weekend of April, we'll be running a GT in conjunction with Kublai Khan. For those that don't know, Kublai Khan is a gaming convention in Northern California. They've been running it for, I want to say almost 20 years, but they've been doing it for a long time. And they've decided to expand to do smaller mini conventions in, I think one is in San Francisco. The one in April is in L.A., quote-unquote L.A., which is like
Burbank.
Everything else. It's actually Burbank. So we'll be doing a GT there, a small one. We'll throw the links for that on our Facebook page. And if you happen to be in the area, you can sign up for two days of gaming. But other than that, Chris, you can also listen to Chris on Forge a Narrative every week. You release on Fridays, right, Chris?
Well, we release whenever Paul finishes editing.
Okay, that's more or less what we do.
But yeah, typically, if it's not a pre-release week, we'll do it on. It'll come out on either Thursday or Friday. If it is something where we're not allowed to talk about it on the show until it's gone up for pre-order, then it'll come out on Saturdays.
Okay,
so.
Okay, but it's essentially weekly, correct?
Yep. It's between an hour to an hour and a half every week. It's been interesting to see where the show's kind of evolved, but
yes.
we tend to throw in interviews in the middle, which has been pretty cool because we like to focus on the more positive aspects of competitive play. So we'll try and get good, well-known, well-liked competitive players on. People talking about having a good experience, talking Tactica. Sometimes we'll talk to, we've talked to some game designers. Mm-hmm. We've talked to, I mean, I've interviewed almost every Black Library author. Right. It's been a little while since we did one of those. So we try to keep it pretty well-rounded, fairly heavy on the competitive talk. But I think that, yeah, anybody who wants to listen to just a bunch of guys who like playing 40K, that's, I mean, that's what we're here for, right? We just talk about it.
Yeah, so don't forget that's Forge the Narrative, the competitive podcast about forging the narrative.
where Paul's concerned, I say that he forces the narrative.
There we go.
That's my
probably joke. More apt, but
I'm the one who probably keeps the narrative more. I write the lore articles for Frontline Gaming too, so yeah. It's like I'm the only one who cares about that, but it's okay. I'll plant my flag.
Why write? Well, I write the Grumpy Old Man article, so.
And I love you for it. I love you for it.
I just write the Tyranid articles.
Yes, my dad, rather, just because you say Grognard.
Oh, really?
The Napoleonic gamer that he is.
Yeah, I talk about putting my Black Legion together. I just finished taking my Prussian line infantry off their sprue because I'm building a Black Powder Prussian army.
Oh man,
Napoleonic Prussian army.
Dude, when I was 4 years old, my dad was like, "Hey, so I've got these horses that need paint on them. So you want to paint some horses?" Like that was how I got into the hobby, was painting Napoleonics.
Yeah,
and particularly painting their horses. That's how it all started.
Yeah, it's a lot of guys. Yeah, I go when I play a game, I go full in. So it's a problem I have. So I guess that's it for tonight. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Again, thank you, Chris, for joining us tonight. Appreciate it.
Good to talk to you, Chris.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you guys, too. I always enjoy hanging out with you guys at LVO. Then, of course, we sass each other in the chat all year long. But yes. It's good to talk to Chris. I appreciate the invite. I'm glad that I can just fill a little bit of those salty shoes.
Well, I'd be lying if I didn't say that. We didn't really miss him, so.
No comment? Because he runs into a stream.
And now we'll never have a stream again. Okay, great.
with that being said, good night, everybody, and have a pleasant tomorrow.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to look for TFG Radio on Facebook, Twitch, Twitter, and don't forget to leave us a positive review on iTunes. Also, don't forget to look up our website, tfgradio.com, for all the latest updates. Finally, don't forget our Patreon page. Just look up TFG Radio. You can contribute as much as you want, and this gives you access to exclusive content. Again, thanks for listening, and good night.